Okay, here we are, and yes, it's been way too long again. I say I'm gonna be consistent, I get caught up, I get busy in life, like a lot of us, and it's been way too long between podcasts, but I'm going to aim to get back to this more regularly. It's hard when you're trying to balance work, training, other social media, and doing things like that, and then sort of things on the side that aren't growing. If anyone's any honest out there, it's sort of hard to stay focused on sometimes because you think, is it worth it? Is anybody listening? Does it really matter? But you know what? For the few people that listen to this, it is worth it. I think I have some good knowledge to share. So here we are again. And again, my goal is to be consistent for you and I bring more guests on and have a chat. But here I am for number six, the JH Dogcast. But I'm going to do this in a different format today because, look, I like listening to long format podcasts that go for a long time, but sometimes they can get a long time, they get bored, you skip forward. I'm going to do this podcast as a power cast. In other words, I'm going to time myself 3 minutes per topic that I'm going to talk about today. Give myself up to 3 minutes, no more. And if I get to the end and I haven't explained myself fully and have more to say, I'm still going to cut it off and I can revisit another podcast. My aim is to keep you interested and understand. Every 3 minutes, I'm going to change a topic. And that's how it's going to work today. So I've got a few things here I want to chat to you about. And when I'm doing these, I love when people send me a message or a question and try to get me to cover things and talk about it. Often in podcasts like this, you know, talking about dogs, you may repeat things, but a lot of it is repetition because people need to hear it again and again. Enough of the rambling because I want to get through this pretty quickly for you. So first topic, stopwatch is going to go on. 3 minutes. What I want to talk to you about first thing is the downfall of using food for training. Now, there's not a lot because food is a great tool to motivate young puppies, to give dogs guidance, to and get them focused on you. And don't mind me just stopping my, turning my phone off here, my watch off. I won't even cut, I'll just turn it off because I don't want to be interrupted. And I did forget to do that. So I'll put myself in a bit of an airplane mode there. So back to the food. It's a great tool. It's good for puppies. You can get a lot out of it. You can use it for older dogs. You can use it certainly to redirect, you know, and reward behaviors, and it has its merits, absolutely. Really what I want to talk about quickly is not creating a crutch for yourself. In other words, to rely on food to train because your dog's not motivated without it. I have noticed this, even noticed it in my own dog. I never used to use food for training ever when I first started professionally being around dogs, which is in the army as a military police dog handler. There was no food use. It's all just pats, praise, you know, put a dog in position, they do the right thing, they get told, good dog, get a pat. And if not, they get put in position and they don't get a pat. So food is, you know, not a new thing to use, but it's very heavy now in training and has a lot of great results. But we want to be careful that we don't rely on it as an only tool, because what you'll find is without the food, your dog's not motivated. That doesn't mean that they don't do things, but they're not as motivated because they're like, they're looking for that primary reinforcer, that number one thing they like as a reward. So what I would say to you with any dog you train, do sessions with food, without, with food, without, with a tug toy, with, in other words, mix it up. Don't become reliant on one primary reward, primary reinforcer, because it can create a motivation for the dog that relies on that to be used, and without it, you don't get the motivation. This is why some people don't use food at all. To be honest, if I had my way with people doing programs with me, with puppies and so forth, I probably wouldn't use any food to a degree. The problem with that, when you've got inexperienced handlers and you're trying to teach to do training without food, it can be a bit of a mess when you've got multiple dogs. So it's just easier to use food as a guide, as a tool, and we should be focusing on fading food over time. In other words, you're doing food, sit for every food, give food. As they get better, you may give food for every fifth sit and then every tenth sit. And we use like a reward schedule and eventually we fade the food away. So in short, that's not rely on food because it can create a lack of motivation without it. So I would encourage you to train your dog other ways, whether it be just even your voice, lots of good boy, good dog, yeah, and learn to use you as the motivator. In the end, that should be the way. You should be aiming to use you as the primary motivator. If you work very hard, your dog should just love you giving the attention and giving the praise. So just think about that. Train your dog multiple ways with multiple reinforcers so it's not relying on one as the only way to motivate the dog. That is that on 3 minutes. Next topic, new trainer advice. There's a lot of people training dogs now. Seems to be, maybe because I follow and on social media, it seems to come up in algorithms. Seems like everyone's a dog trainer. Obviously not the case. However, new trainer advice, what I would give you if you're trying to get into dog training, what is important? Obviously, if you've got a certification, people ask for that sometimes. To be honest, I've never been asked for it. However, I probably tell people what I've done in the past. More than anything, experience matters. You need to get hands-on dogs. You need to get, and even before you have to charge money, you need to be training people's dogs, friends' dogs, whatever, finding ways to get hands-on dogs, whether it be through a daycare or a shelter, and giving advice and growing your skills that way. Obviously, doing a certification and learning formal things can definitely help, because you're gonna learn about the animal husbandry side of things, you know, behaviors, body language. There is some merit to it, absolutely. But I just wouldn't say rely on that as your only tool to get clients, because in the end, I've known people that have done 6 month online courses or 6 week or whatever it is, and getting an online certificate doesn't mean you're a dog trainer. You're worlds apart between theory and practical. That's what I'm saying. Next thing is, as a new trainer, you need to choose the way you're gonna train dogs, which in the past wasn't a problem, but now there's two worlds. There's force-free, positive only, and then there's what we call balance, which is unfortunate. We have labels. We shouldn't have labels, but we do. I would say I obviously lean towards balance. That's what I am. I use what works. I will use positive reinforcement. I will use a lead. I'll use voice. I use whatever. We're not using cruelty, but we're using whatever tools and manage and voice and commands and praise it takes to get the dog to do what you need it to do. We're trying to be as positive as possible, but the reality is sometimes we can't. We need to manage dogs physically when we deal with, especially with highly aggressive dogs. Food isn't always going to work. But I would say be honest and be true to yourself. Choose where you want to go with your training. I've even suffered it online before and been bullied or, I suppose, harassed a little bit. You've got to try and sort of shut that out, because they're very vocal. People that want to tell you they hate what you do are very loud, and it can deter you, and it can push you into a direction. And don't do that. Stick to what you're good at. You know what works through proven methods. If you're getting results the right way, no cruelty, but you're getting results and you're using an open mind, keep your open mind. Don't stick to one style, but use what works. Be true to that. Don't get bullied or manipulated into a way because of social pressure. Get your hands on dogs. Plenty of dogs, different temperaments, different breeds. Challenge yourself with everything. Try not to stick to one wheelhouse. Try to be multi-skilled in all areas, and work hard and get your hands on dogs. Like I've said, there's no exchange or nothing except you can use apart from getting hands on dogs. Like I said, practical is way more important than just the theory. We need to get leads in hands and training dogs to do what they do. So that's your 3 minutes of talking about new trainer advice. There's lots of other things, but that in short is a bit of advice for new trainers that I would give. Next one is intent in dogs. So a lot of people, when I talk about training a dog, and I suppose the one that's most common would be aggressive dogs. If a dog is aggressive, let's call it by breed. You know, name a breed you want to talk about that would be a aggressive, prey-driven, high-drive dog. If it is bred to be like that, I'm not talking about a dog that genetically isn't normally like that. Let's talk about a Labrador. It's not a high reactivity dog. Can be. I've had one myself. But let's face it. Overall, a Labrador is a pretty universally known dog. That it's a pretty loving dog with dogs and people. However, they can be a little reactive here and there. But as a rule, they're a pretty easy dog. So that dog being aggressive may be a trainable thing, because it's not a breed that's meant to be like that. So maybe something happened to make it like that that you need to work through. Let's go to another breed that has been bred to be like that and be prey driven, high drive, want to fight, want to grab, not just bite, but wants to hold and hold to the ground and possibly kill things. That's the reality of some dogs. That is intent. Very hard to take that intent out of a dog to the point of you never will. It is bred to be like this. The best you can do is manage that intent, and that's what you should be doing. Aiming to manage a dog's intent, not take it out of its head if it's the breed. So that's the way I want you to think about that. Is this breed bred to do this? If no, there's a better chance of changing, because it's something wrong with it in the way of it's had a trauma, something happened and it's caused it to be like that. Or there's the other dog that's the breed that's meant to be like this. That's the dog you're not going to change. You're aiming to manage the intent, teaching it. You can look at the dog and not like it, but you can't attack it. I can't stop a dog what they think. You cannot get in here and turn it off. Best you can do is maybe redirect it, focus on something else, but the intent will probably always be there. So think of it that way. That is the safest way to think of it. Otherwise, you can get complacent and think of that dog as being a safe dog around all dogs, and then you get caught out. Be realistic with the breed you have and understand if that is a breed that's meant to be like that, it is what it is, I've got to manage it. If it's not a breed not meant to be like that, I've got a lot better chance of managing that behavior. That's a pretty good description, I think, in about intent and whether you can take it out or can't take it out. Next one, moving down the list, dealing with anxiety. Anxiety slash fear, let's call it. What I mean by dealing with it is, there's lots in this. This is a very complex topic in how people would deal with it and what sort of anxiety is it. Is it separation? Is it what? I'm talking more, you've got a dog that sees a dog or a person and it's extremely scared, fearful, and doesn't want to go near it. So I'm probably leaning more towards a side of fear, which is really merging with anxiety. They're anxious around things, they're fearful. I think those two are, you know, one of the same. They come together a little bit. There's a crossover between those two things. So most people manage that by, obviously, first step is probably food, trying to associate positive with that thing, and there's nothing wrong with that. And giving the dog time and taking patience and working through approximations to get it towards something. And that's all good and well in the real world, in the nice world that works perfect. But the reality is sometimes fear will not be cancelled out by food, if that makes sense. You can't. The food just is not powerful enough to turn that fear off. So if we're talking about a dog being scared of, let's say a dog that is a nice dog and showing no aggression. If we wait for that dog to make the decision to get to that dog, it's probably never going to happen sometimes. We need to use a little bit of compulsion, which means we're helping the dog get near. And we may have to use a little bit of lead pressure, bringing the dog towards it, bringing the other dog in very slowly, taking time. But we need to get that dog with the dog. And then we need to get that light bulb to go on and just go, oh my God, I don't need to be scared of this dog. I actually got there and it didn't attack me. And that can be the same with a person. We need to do that slowly and be respectful of the dog and their nature. But I just need you to get your head around the fact that if you are going to leave it on the dog's terms forever, you may not get there. But I've had a lot of success with using compulsion, making the dog do it, and it can be a little stressful and it can be a little uncomfortable for the dog. I get it. But I explain to owners there's a method to this and there's a reason for this style. And they'll see it an hour later, their dog's with dogs or people and realizing that it can relax and it can breathe and the owner's going to protect it. A lot of it is that as well. You've got to be the dog's protector. You've got a fearful dog. Some of that fear comes from because you're not a confident enough owner. You're not a good leader. When you become a good leader, a lot of their fear goes away. Their fear's there because you don't protect them well. You're not a strong leader. You're too soft. And they're like, well, I've got to protect you and I'm anxious and I'm scared. And there's this mix of emotions. So we need to step up as owners and handlers and be better leaders so a lot of our dogs can drop their fear and not feel they have to protect us or protect themselves or whatever it is. So be a better leader and aim to use a little bit of compulsion within reason. We're not doing too forceful, but we're not allowing the dog to be scared of something I call irrational. In other words, that dog's beautiful. It's showing no aggression, perfect body language. It's irrational fear. So it's just not acceptable. If the dog was aggressive, that's different. But if that dog's nice, we need to teach your dog to show that, hey, look what happens when you get there. And the more dogs you do with that, and the more people you do, you'll find your dog starts to breathe, shoulders relax, face changes, and it can help over time. It still means it might take a while, but that is the way I would lean towards. Don't allow them to be scared. You have to help them out of their fear by being good leaders, bit of compulsion, and work through it that way. That's 3 minutes. Done. Next one, let's go down the list. Let's talk about puppies and chewing. How do we deal with puppies chewing and what do we do? So a lot of people will talk to me and go, how do I stop my puppy chewing? First thing is I say, you probably won't stop it. We need to redirect it. Now, a lot of people talk about this, a lot of trainers, and there's a very known, nothing new what I'm saying here, but this needs to be said by many people. So I would say to you, when you go towards your young puppy, or any dog that's chewing badly, but generally it's a puppy thing we're talking here, you don't go what I call unarmed. Go with a tug toy, go with food, control the play. Either way, you want to be able to redirect or control. If you allow that puppy to make the choice, it's not going to make a good choice. Very hard to correct or reprimand a young puppy that's just been born. We're talking 3 months, 4 months here, 5 months. Their brains are crazy. They're out of their minds right now. So to reprimand that dog for chewing, probably won't get very far. You can do little corrections, absolutely, but reality is it's too young, it's too impulsive, and it can't help itself yet. So your job as an owner is to understand that and accept that about your young puppy and say, the best thing I need to do is redirect. Turn it on to something else. It needs to do it. It needs to satisfy its drive, satiate its drive. Allow it to do that, and there's a lot better chance it'll be, less chance it'll be your furniture or your shoes if you allow it to chew certain things. Now, some people will say, yeah, the problem is that your teacher can chew one thing, it's allowed to chew everything. I don't agree with that. You can teach your dog, and in the end, they need to do it. So whether that's true or not, it's irrelevant. The dog needs to chew, so you might as well try and give it a choice to chew something. I've got two dogs, and one of my dogs, Nash, tug toys, whatever, he doesn't chew other stuff. Very, very rare. He might, with Winston, here and there, chew something soft, but it's very rare. So his tug toy play and prey drive, which is pretty strong, never redirects onto my furniture. It's never ever happened. So I think that's a bit of a myth, especially if you instigate the play and you control the play. Remember, when you play with your pup, you also have a lead on it. So if it does go to chew and bite your hands, you can pull it away and you can stop it. And you can try redirecting. You can give a little no, pull it away, maybe redirect it with a bit of food. It chews on there, pull it away, maybe get it to sit. Yes, reward it, mark it, repeat, repeat, repeat. There's a bit more to that part of the conversation, but this is more about being realistic that you're not going to stop it, or you're best to redirect it. Okay, think of it that way. Turn it onto something else. Choose what it likes, give it that, let it do it. Bit of a rule that's fairly true. I think a tired dog's a good dog in a lot of ways. Tire your puppy out, keep them tired through games, and they're less likely to chew your other furniture because you've given that drive and you've allowed them to get it out of their system. So redirect them, very important. Next one, I want to ask you or talk to you about people walking your dog. Whoever walks your dog, let's say, now I'm talking probably here more about parents getting their kids walking dogs, which is great. Kids should walk their pets. But what I want you to ask yourself, this goes for anyone walking your dog, is can the person walking the dog manage that dog if a situation arises and we call that what if moment comes up? Let's talk, they're walking, a dog runs out of a house. I'm not necessarily highly aggressive, but in the end, that's hard for anyone to deal with. Talking about the average dog runs out of the house, having a bit of a bark at your dog, runs up to your dog, running around and, you know, causing a bit of mischief, that sort of thing. Can that person deal with it? They should know how. They should be strong enough. I've been walking, I've come across kids, I've had my two dogs, and the other dogs barked, and the child, whoever was walking the dog, generally it was kids, had a lot of trouble dealing with their dog, and there was nothing even bad going on. So if my dogs were highly aggressive or their dog was reactive, I think that child or person is going to be dragged across the road and we're going to have problems on their hands. So I just want to put that food for thought in your head of who is walking your dog and can they manage the situation? It's very important. Can they deal with it if something goes wrong? There's obviously skills and tools you can learn to do that and how to do it and managing your dog behind you, but that's not what this video is about. It's 3 minutes talking about putting this in your brain. So next time whoever walks your dog, whether it be you or your kids, your wife, your husband, whoever, look at them and say, or ask them, do you know what to do if a dog runs out of a house at you? Do you know how to manage it? Can you? Have you got the right equipment to manage your dog? Are you on a harness? Are you on a collar, a slip lead, whatever? Think about all this. Like I said, this is really just to put that food for thought in your brain that you think about it. And if not, you take measures and take steps to make that be able to happen and to correct it. So think about that one because it's a safety issue. Obviously, we don't want dogs to get hurt or people to get hurt. Next one, let's talk about overanalyzing body language. This is one I've added the other day. I believe it is overanalyzed. Now, when it comes to body language, yes, it's important to read it. But what I'm saying here is there's body language that definitely means something and definitely need to know. But those ones are usually the most obvious. What I'm talking about here, so the examples of those ones obviously be, you know, teeth being bared, dogs growling, whale eye, like a dog looking down and sort of showing the whites of its eyes, showing fear, all these sorts of things. Cowering, just the obvious body language one. Look, I like to think most people know those. You know, stiff tail, straight up, shoulders pushing tall, dogs becoming really stiff. There's a many of them. But what I'm talking about here, the overanalyzed ones that drive me a little crazy are, let's talk about yawning. Yawning can have a few different meanings. In the end, I was only just thinking about it before I recorded this. We're not dogs, obviously. We're not in a dog's mind. This is all observation. And yes, some of it's very accurate. We realize this happens and then this happens. We know. But a lot of it is a bit of a guess and it's observation. But I think there's very blurry lines in some of them what it can mean. But yawning is one that comes up a lot. My dog yawns when we go to our daycare. Yawning can be a release of stress, but not all bad stress. It could be a buildup of just excitement and like a healthy stress of where we're going and excitement and tension. And a yawn, is some dogs will get that out through that. It can be a bad thing. Yawning can also mean a dog can be a little anxious and be uncomfortable, absolutely. But Nash will yawn and he cannot run into daycare quick enough. That is the truth. Every single time, I've never had to make him go in there. He runs through the gates, runs around there like he owns the place. But he yawns when we get on the street, every time he starts. And if he doesn't yawn, he definitely opens his mouth and relieves a bit of that that build-up of tension. But it's a good tension. He can't wait to get in there. So be careful that we don't know, because I have people do it all the time. I love people online that I've had one person, I've been walking a dog, training it, and it wasn't love. You know, it was learning as a puppy, and it wasn't doing anything right, and we're trying to make it do the right thing and working through it. And it sniffed the ground every now and again, and people may say, oh, that's a sign of apathy. It means your dog, you know, doesn't want to be there, not enjoying it and whatever. You know what? That may have been true, but that's life. Dogs are going to have stress here and there. Humans have stress here and there. Just because one dog shows a body language that means a certain thing, it doesn't mean we shouldn't train it or stop training. Things are a little stressful, and sometimes you have to make dogs do things they don't want to do. Life's tough sometimes. That's not about me being cruel, but it's about being real and going, it can't all be what we call rainbows and butterflies and everything on a dog's term. That is how people end up with dogs jumping on kitchen benches and chewing the furniture and biting this and biting that, because we don't want to stress our dogs and we want to observe every correct bit of body language. So if the dog shows any sign of discomfort, we better stop. These are the ones I'm more talking about. The aggression ones and all of that, that's very different. We have to pay attention to that. But if your dog shows a slight sign of being a little uncomfortable, a little bit stressed, not liking something, that is not a reason to stop training or not train that way. Because on the other side, I've seen many dogs work through it and then changing it. Ah, oh, got it now. Sometimes you've got a little sticking point, which the dog doesn't like, and you'll have a brick wall you feel like you're running into, and you've got to push through it. But you can get there, I promise you that. So don't overanalyze body language. Don't ignore it, but that's not overanalyze it. It's very important, okay? I've got one here, another one. There may be things you can't change in your dog, and we need to be okay with this. So what I mean by that is you chose a breed. It is what it is. And then we need to understand that whether it be a good thing or a bad thing, whether it be aggression or a high drive dog, high excitable through the breed you chose or whatever it is, pick an emotion, pick something about your dog. We need to accept sometimes you can't change it. You need to go, my dog is my dog. They've had trauma, they're reactive. Best I can do is manage it. Border collie, my dog is my dog. The amount of people buying border collies and they're not liking how they act is numerous. We need to understand, you bought a border collie, you may not like certain behavior, but you are obligated to know more about the dog when you bought it. So you can't change it. You need to accept it about your dog. They're a high drive dog. They can be very reactive with other dogs. They're gonna run back and forth. They've got a lot of energy. They can test, they can be protesty. They're very intelligent, but they can be very stubborn sometimes when you tell them to do something, they don't wanna do it. I've known many of them to have a give a nip here and there. Point is, that doesn't make that a bad border collie. It makes it a border collie. It makes the dog that it's meant to be. They are like that. You buy a German Shepherd, you're not going to stop it being protective. It is innate. It's instinctive. It's what it's meant to do. We've got to control it and manage it and train it, but we don't need to change it. You need to understand there's things you may want to change, but you can't. And if you're going to be like that, we need to do better in dogs that we choose. Don't buy the breed and aim to change the breed. You buy what you buy and you buy. You don't buy a fast car to not ever drive it fast. You bought it because maybe you want to drive fast. That is that car. Yeah. You buy things in life because they do certain things for you. You don't buy something and you go, why does it do that? You knew what it did when you bought it. Maybe a strange comparison, but it's similar in a lot of ways. You bought a dog, you know what it is. Apart from the buying a dog, if there is something that comes with that dog, not related to temperament, but a fear comes in because it gets attacked and it develops this fear and a reactivity, be realistic and understand maybe you won't get that out of that dog, but the best you can do is aim to manage it and help the dog get better through training. And we accept that. When we accept that about a dog, we'll be less frustrated. because we're not trying to change something maybe that can't be changed. So that's all my topics in 3 minutes, under 3 minutes. Hopefully I didn't bore you. So thank you for watching if you watched on YouTube. Thank you for listening if you listened on Apple or Spotify, wherever you are. I do appreciate it. And I know I've said this like a broken record. I am going to aim to get back to these realistically minimum of one a fortnight. I'd like to do more, but things come up, we get busy. I don't have a lot of guests around the area necessarily bring on, so I'm not in the busy area, but I will grow this over time for those who want to listen. And I think there's a fair bit of good little knowledge in this podcast today. And it was a shorter one, 23 minutes, 45 seconds so far. So I'm going to cut it there so I don't hold you up any longer. I appreciate you listening. But what I'd appreciate even more is if you like what I do, give us a subscribe, give a like, give a share, something like that. This is free content for people, costs nothing, and all we ask in return as content creators or whatever we do is a little appreciation. It goes a long way. So I will see you soon here, or you will hear me soon wherever you're listening. Thanks very much. Bye.